I took this topic on when I had served on the State Bar CLE Committee. One of the things about the CLE Committee, they kind of overview all of the State Bar CLE programs across this, in all practice areas. An outstanding group of attorneys from all over the state. The problem is if you open your mouth there, they call on you to follow through with your idea. And I had the idea, you know, nobody's ever looked at what the intermediate appellate courts are doing with criminal cases. Then they called and they said, hey, Jim, we want you to be course director for this particular day-long CLE, and we want you to do this topic. I said, okay. I do want to thank two people. The lady on the left is Gabby Jones. She is my legal assistant. This was her first day of work. She has a master's in criminal justice from the University of Texas at Tyler. The statistical analysis, because it's been a long time since I took statistics related to political science at Texas A&M, the statistics, the analysis, the software, that was primarily done by Gabby. That was her first day of work before I told her about this project in Texarkana. And if you haven't been up to Texarkana Federal Court, you need to go because it is the only federal court in two states. Yes, they have a U.S. Marshal's office on the Texas side and one on the Marshall side, or the Arkansas side. Same thing, they have a magistrate, they have a district judge. Cool building. The other person is Stephen Keene. Stephen came to me, and this was fortunate, at the start of the pandemic. Stephen's family's from Tyler, his wife's in Tyler. She works at the University of Texas at Tyler, and Stephen decided, well, I'm gonna go to law school in Boston. So he was a student up at the New England School of Law in Boston. And they shut down 9 months into his first year. So he came home, finished his first year remotely, and then he's been working for me since. He just finished his third year at South Texas on a transfer, graduated, and is gonna be taking the July bar. So it was good for him because his whole second year, he was able to help with this project. And then we got into it and we started looking, and then it's, my God, what have I gotten myself into? We know we have 14 courts of appeal. They're all based jurisdictionally or geographically. There are some overlaps. The 6th and the 12th, the 5th and the 6th can overlap. After the 2018 elections, four of the courts, flipped from primarily Republican judges being elected to democratically elected judges. That was Dallas, both Houston courts, and the Austin Court of Appeals. We're all criminal appellate practitioners. Haynes and Boone, Lytton Liberato, who was a former state bar president about 35 years ago, did a survey on the civil appellate side for the intermediate courts of appeal across Texas. Second time she did it in 10-year increments, she did it with Kent Rutter. Kent Rutter's now the partner at Haynes and Boone. He took this last one. And one of the things that he was really curious about is, okay, we've got this shift. We're advising clients on whether or not they should appeal, and we're talking about money. And if you're representing Texaco, they want to know what the odds are that they're going to succeed on appeal before they go and chunk down huge amounts of money. If you ever want to learn how undervalued you are, talk to a civil attorney about, oh, well, yeah, it's going to be, we need to post an appeal bond, and that's going to be X thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars. It'll blow your mind. So I looked at Kent's study. It was published down at the University of Houston Law Review, and I thought, you know, that's interesting. So we got 14 courts of appeal, 4,193 cases. Yes, you read that correctly. That's 2.5 times what Kent reviewed. The three of us reviewed this. We did that judicial year, September through August of 18 and 19. We did this at the start of the pandemic in 2020 when courts were shut down. We were able to have some time to do this. We were hoping that the PDR decisions would be made by that point on those years. And we wanted to see if there was any appreciable difference in outcomes for those courts and then for all the other courts. We did not include juvenile appeals. If you don't know, the juvenile section of the state bar does a quarterly mail out, and they analyze each and every juvenile opinion issued. It's a phenomenal resource. We did not include expunctions. We did not include non-disclosures. Now, what's different between civil and criminal appeals? We both have trials. We both have jury trials. We have bench trials. Civil, the majority of their appellate load isn't following a trial. It's following motions for summary judgment. It's following the denial of a 4590 affidavit from a Med-Mal case. It's all interlocutory. Well, not all. A lot of it's interlocutory. We don't see much of that on the criminal side. We do see some suppression. We do see some double jeopardy, motions to quash. But even then, you file a motion to suppress. If the judge grants it, wonderful. The state will appeal it. If they deny it, then you're appealing that issue, but it's following a plea generally. What did we look at? All sorts of things. The data set is so huge, I think it will fit on a 50 gigabyte portable drive. I'm not sure it'll fit on anything smaller. I'm not even sure of that. We collected all the docket information. We collected the authoring justice, if it was known. The type of proceeding in the trial court, what issues were raised. Now, you've heard from some great attorneys. There were a few appeals where there were 14 issues raised. 14 issues raised doesn't do much for our statistical analysis. So we limited it to a maximum of 5. What we did, there were many briefs with multiple issues. We would group those. What the results were, whether there was subsequent review from the Court of Criminal Appeals.